For Belfast, we were the main suppliers of homemade explosives. Yes, I don't regret anything I've done. I might have hurt people, I might have killed people, but it was a war. What I love was going to bed and hearing a big boom. That was me, or a big boom the next day. It was better than drugs. Take it from me. Wow. I was striking a blow which I thought was for the freedom of Ireland.
Paddy, sound for joining me. I'm glad we could link up eventually.
You're welcome.
Okay, cool. We'll get into your story there. You were born. It's always interesting to me when various like IRA members were born. Given that you might have had. You might have gotten into your teens by the time the trouble started, or in your mid-20s or early 20s. For you, you were born 65, so you very much knew little of a life without this conflict going on.
Yeah. I was born on the 12th of July, by the way.
What's the significance? Sorry, I should know what I'm saying.
That's the loyalists celebrate King Billy on the 12th of July.
Okay, fair enough. It's fairly ironic. where were you born, raised?
I was born in the Lower Falls, raised in Gibson Street, Platinum Street first. With my granny and granda, I lived with my granny and granda, and then my dad bought a house and moved into Gibson Street. And I lived on Gibson Street till about 72, I can't really remember, but I remember going up to Kelly's Bar. It was blew up at the top of White Rat. That was blew up. I can't remember the year because my memory's fucked up with I'm a recovering addict.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it has jaded my memory, but I remember going through the Kelly's when it was blew up, looking for bottles of beer when we show. I think it may have been 7 or something like that. I'm not too sure.
What sort of a place was it to grow up? I assume being near the Falls Road, it was very much like staunchly Republican, yeah.
I grew up in a staunchly official IRA district.
Really? Okay. You later joined the provisionals, not the officials, right?
I joined the provisionals. I was asked by a fellow official IRA man that I wanna join, and I refused because my family was always a provo family.
You describe times as a kid. Obviously you grew up with British soldiers around you. I mean from the age of like 5 upwards. You described almost like a lifelong kind of battle with them. Even as a kid, you'd be throwing stones or ripping up a bit of pavement to have a go at them if you could.
Yeah. Well, our opus Mirandi was every time I came out of school was the wait on the foot patrols or the army jeeps coming down to Springfield Road when I lived in New Barnsley. And when I lived in the Falls, it was the top of Leeson Street. The struggle.
You describe obviously like a very adversarial relationship with British soldiers. You said one or two times that on the way to school, one of them would be very rough at you or give you a kick. Described.
Yeah. The Marines got me twice when I was about 15, 16, and they ended up, I got a beating off them when I was drinking in Dunville Park when I was 15, you know, so I drank from an early age and I smoked cannabis from an early age, but I ended up a cannabis addict when I came out of Long Cash.
Interesting. Okay, so I've heard the IRA was like very kind of much against drugs, and they wouldn't be letting fellas in if they knew that they would partake.
No, that's why I smoked on my own and I didn't give Laurel a finger.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, you kept your tip. When was it? When was it that you joined the junior wing? What age were you? What year?
I can't remember. I think it was 12 or 13. It was in a cousin's house in Basement. I got sworn in. I think I got sworn in. I'm not too sure. But I ended up with the role of KO training officer. But we hadn't had to train with. I had no weapons or nothing. Our only objective was to go out, scout the area, go around to the barracks, get registration, stuff like that. You know, and any army foot patrols report back to them. But my mum found out that I was in the Fianna, and she went and got me out. I think my mum was a volunteer too, but she doesn't talk too much now. But I have got a lot of information out of her, but Belinware, for the past 7 years. She has told me about the feuds and about IRA meetings in the house and stuff like that. You know, me seeing strangers coming into the house that I didn't recognize.
Your mom, you said that when your mom found out, she got you to leave, and there was was that the case, or am I thinking of someone else?
Yeah, that's the case. She got. Obviously, somebody in financial knew my mom, or I don't know why my mom was connected, because she would never ever say. But she got me turfed out of the Fianna, and I never rejoined the IRA again until I was 20. I think it was 22. It was just after lock off, you know, and it was the only time we ever talked till the MI5, or not MI5, this special branch, when I could stop coming back from an Everton and a Liverpool, Everton and a Chelsea game, where a screw spotted me in the boat, and he got special branch to pull me in and question me. Was held for 4 hours, and that's the only time I've ever spoken custody. And they asked me what was the reason why I joined, and I said it's because you were fucking slaughtering us, that's why.
Right. Okay. So. What year was it that you rejoined and then kind of got going properly?
I'm not too sure what year lock all was, but I think it was 87 or 88, and I got caught in 1992. 4 years as an operator, but what I was doing, making bonds, was a very, very long time, especially with our squads being infiltrated by Scapitici and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, so Lock Hall was May 8th, 87. Okay, so it was after that.
I was always a Republican. I was always learning the Irish language. I was doing favours for X, Y, and Z, you know, stuff like that.
How was it that you found your way to the role of a bomb maker? It's quite a very specific sort of task.
It's funny. I'm an electrical engineer, but I never was sent away training. I brought two fellas up to Letterkenny, and they were given the formula on the how to make explosives itself, right? But we started off with benzene and diesel, and then fertilizer, as you know, and then the mix went into sugar, and the new formula was sugar and fertilizer, and I ended up picking up myself, because I was sort of very, very electrical minded as being an electrical engineer, so it was no problem for me picking it up and bypassing the overloads on the grinders, because I kept on cutting out. So you had to wait until the reset again. So I bypassed the overload, and we were able to bolt away for hours and hours and hours. And then gradually I ended up with me and mom making most of the bombs up for maybe two or three years, because the squad I was in, I worked my way up, if you understand. We weren't connected till, like any unit, we were a special unit, a bomb making unit, who supplied X, Y, and Z, you know, and what a drove down the country in a sea convoy car. First driver would have been a safety driver, second driver would have been to pick up whoever was in the third car. But we'd never use indicators or anything like that. If you used the indicator, that's when you knew it was a checkpoint. But we never ever had any bar when we were doing that until there was a lot of explosives hijacked from Richardson Fertilizer. And then it ended up that Belfast was flooded with explosives and dumpsters here and dumpsters everywhere. But one of the dumps I worked at, it was caught, being it was being watched, which was in Clonard Monastery, right? And they unveiled it on the day of my arrest. I went to my OC and I said to my OC, I thought I'd seen a glimmer of a camera from Blackstaff Mill, right? And we'd done a £1,000 job, and that made my job, but it went till the target, right? And it never went. It had two detonators in it and two box timers. And I was that confident, they were that confident in my explosives, they didn't have to do testers because they were always going off, if you understand. And I've talked to the volunteer who was done with that job. I lost one volunteer on that operation, but I think it was an operation that the RUC let go ahead, right, because we were watching the dump in Clonard Monastery. There was two jobs come out of that job. There was an R1 went to the north, an R Street, which was only 500 yards away from it, and it was hit the next morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. Lucky enough, the two volunteers who were supposed to go in and do the business weren't there, and the cops hit it, which was another fucking, so to speak, to say that it was being watched, you know. So we left it at lay empty for 2 or 3 years until I got caught down in Bond Street, and then it was unveiled, this, wow, we caught this big bomb factory in Clonard Monastery, making worldwide fucking headlines, whereas they were watching it all along. I don't know why they had it bugged, but it was dug into the, it was, they had a stage, right? Under the floor, the bricks was all cut out, and I used to crawl up in my belly and pull out the bags of fertilizer. And I reckon the guy who was involved in that job with me making £1,000 up, which was drove into a target and never went off. I reckon he was one of the ones who was an informer, and I'll not blame him, but his nickname is Leg Alarm.
I see. Let me take you back a little bit to like your childhood and teen years. Given that you would later become a bomb maker, what did you think? What did you think, like, when bombs went off as a kid and as a teen? Did they scare you? Did it make you afraid to go out? Any sort of kind of effect on you?
No. The earliest memory of, I think when I lived in New Barnsley, the earliest memory I can remember is going over to visit where the Ballymurphy massacre happened. And there was a priest sat there, right, giving the last rites to one of the ones that the Brits had murdered. And this is my first memory of the war, was going over to Ed Cross in Springfield Park and visiting where the priest had been shot dead. That's my earliest memory, as well as another fellow who was shot there on the Springfield Road. He was blind, and I think it was UVF, the UDA, went and shot him. And I forget his name. Fuck me, what's his name? It'll come to me when I think. But he had a buzzer on it where the lights went off to inform him that somebody was at the door, and they shot him dead, you know. But I remember gun battles in New Barnsley, and my mom out in the street, running up and down the street and into the house. This is when the gun battles was going on from Spring Martin, and they were shooting from the mill. It was, I forget the name of it, but it was like a big DIY place, a wood place, if you understand, in Spring Hill. But every day I was writing, and I was in the basis of my life, and getting harassed by the cops and the Brits, and then I turned into a punk, which made it even worse. I was getting more harassment.
So did you have... Did you have any, for bomb making note, did you have any sort of like internal manual or anything? Or was it just all word of mouth passed down?
It was all word of mouth passed down. And me being an electrical engineer, I used to come up with ideas myself of trying to detonate bombs, because lanes weren't working. Lanes, they were spotting the lanes in the helicopter, if you understand what I mean. So that's why they had to use remote control down in South Armagh, and even up here. I mean, all the gear that came in from Libya, all the gear that came in from Libya. I mean, the machine gun said for fucking no damn hand grenades, and using facing line for fucking to set the hand grenade off to try and blow Brits up. That's how fucking daft it was. You know, they had all these guns, grenades, weapons, detonators, the lot, and they were drip feeding us.
Right. Okay. So like most of the bombs you made over your course of bomb maker, were they from like non traditional materials, like you said, fertilizer, sugar, or were there some that were using like purely made for purpose explosive, like Semtex and so on?
We used Semtex, and one of our jobs was 100 pounds of Semtex caught, and I'm not going to the reason, but if I had had in the way, the guy who informed the police there was 100 pounds of Semtex planted in the place, only he had Republican connections, he wasn't stiffed.
Oh, really? As in it was found out that he was an informant and his connection?
No, he wasn't an informant. No, he wasn't an informant. He just informed the police that a bomb had been left in the premises.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, I gotcha. So you kind of touched on it there briefly. Most of the bombs you made, would they have been remote fuse?
Most of them would have been box timers with... Most of them were all proxy bombs, where you use a box timer and a mercury tilt switch in case the target detonated with the shotgun. So the mercury tilt switch would bypass the box timer and set the bomb off.
Did you only make car bombs, or did you also make these type of bombs that fellas would put on the bottom of someone's car and they turn
no,
on the...
I've never used an up and under in my life. No, but we made mortars and stuff like that. We made mortars. We were prolific in making mortars and mortar bombing multi targets and stuff like that.
Interesting. Okay. As you're sitting there like making a bomb, do you know the job that it's going to be intended for? Like, do you know kind of when and where? Or are you just...
See the OC if I had, which if I ever... I'll call him Machacho. What's his nickname? Machacho, right? I'm not naming him because of family manners. I don't want to upset family manners. But we call him Machacho. No, he was very, very security conscious, right? And he would have took you out of the house. He would have said to you, right, there's an operation happening tomorrow, and he would have brought you to a safe house so that you had no contacts with anybody or had no contacts with phones or anything like that, if you understand. So what we would have done was, we would have stayed in the house, right, when I hadn't done the job and then returned. But there was a whole load of our jobs that I believe that the cops let happen and fucked up catching us. Like the one that was telling you about the £1,000, there was only one volunteer caught in that, right? I think it half fucked up and only arrested one volunteer. You know?
When you say fucked up, as in like they intended on doing the right thing, or they...
They're intended on capturing us all or taking us out.
But didn't, because for some reason, probably protecting
for some reason they made a balls up.
Okay, so yeah, we just said that, like, you wouldn't know about the particular. Okay.
No, you wouldn't know. In fact, there was a job I went on a long time, and it was a taxi driver, right? And I targeted this place, which I would have went to regular, right? And I'm not too sure. I'm going back, and I can't really remember, but I think I took the wrong road. I was a lead car in a convoy of four cars, and we had hijacked the van, took a van over, turned it and put mortars in it, and we positioned it. They were not facing the target because the van was on the sliding door, or the whatever they'd done. I don't know what they'd done with the van, because I had no knowledge of it, right? Didn't know what. There was other ones, plus we put a baby trap down as well. The cats, the ones who were sealing the area off, right? But on that job there, a lot of us were chased. We ended up in car chases, and we were lucky to get away. I ended up having driving through Crumlin and Lurgan. Coming that way, if you understand what I mean. I don't want to give too much information away, like I did in the first interview that.
You're grand. No worries. Anything, of course. Anything afterwards that you.
No, you don't have to record. Not cut anything out. Me, anything I say is turned over.
Okay, grand. No worries. I was going to ask you. Okay, so let's say the example you gave, like your OC takes you aside and say, okay, and we need you to make a bomb for a job tomorrow, but you don't know where and you don't know what and so on.
It got that bad. That I was missing maybe 3 days of working in and grinding. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
So I had to fucking say to the OC, look, I'm fucking scant the fuck. So they put us on an IRA wage where we're getting 20 quid every Sunday. And our forte was to go and hide somewhere so we could get a fucking break and have a drink. Because we were constantly operating, constantly fucking doing things, targeting things.
I see. So let's say, like with that scenario, let's say you make a bomb, you know it's for a job tomorrow, you kind of don't know where, right? But like in the meantime, in waiting, are you sitting in suspense, like waiting by the radio, listening out for your work?
There was only once where we sat and we put a landmine down, and the targets weren't passing this road, and we were all sitting in the house and we were waiting on the next. We had to go and do our job, blow somewhere up to get them out of the barracks, so we could target a Saracen with a big landmine, right? But whatever happened, the job went off, but I'm not too sure, I can't remember. I was only involved in, I'm not sure why I mixed it, but I was involved in it, and it was our squads, if you understand what I mean, working with us. You know, we would have worked on our own and worked everywhere all over the country.
Your unit there, like, were ye just the bomb makers for a particular geographical area, or for like all of the provisional IRA?
I'm not too sure, but for Belfast we were the main suppliers of homemade explosives, yes.
It must have this would be a tough thing to kind of deal with, like, psychologically, but it must have happened where with your bombs, whether you probably didn't intend for them to kill innocent people, but you must have found out after a few of them.
No, I'll tell you, we're coming up with a base, the base to save civilians' lives. Now, talking with the OC, he told me that they had spotters in the crowd watching. Do you know what I mean? Keeping the technique. Just making sure that the place was sealed off and blah, blah, blah. And civilians, we always give a warning. We always give a... You had to make a bomb. You had to... Because the Brits had a certain time to defuse a bomb. So you had to fucking... You had to set it down till its nearest time, give them as nearest time as possible to evacuate the place. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't regret anything I've done. I may have hurt people, I may have killed people, but it was a war.
Did you, if you don't mind me asking, do you know of bombs that you made that did end up killing innocent people?
I think so. Not innocent people, combatants.
Oh, really? No, I'm talking about civilians. I wouldn't
count civilians. No.
Oh, really? Okay, fair enough. If that had happened, do you think it would weigh very heavily on your mind?
Of course, because I'm not a psychopath. I've already been through PTSD and stuff like that. And the guy said to me, "You weren't a psychopath. You had a good heart on you." But it's just a situation we grew up in. We were occupied and we weren't treated properly by the loyalist community. And now I have made my amends. I've reached out to loyalists and I have loyalist friends as well. I'm writing a book with the loyalists at the minute.
I'd actually love to speak to him at some stage. I've heard that bomb makers can often get like bitten by their own work. You'll sometimes see like bomb makers in the Middle East maybe missing a bit of a finger or something. Did anything close to that ever happen with you? Premature?
No. I knew what I was doing. You know, you had to be very, very careful and work on a plastic bath and mixing a plastic bath so that there was no metal when you were mixing away. You know, because they used to use snap mixers with a shovel, and I'd killed a couple of volunteers in premature explosions.
Oh, really? Well, what kind of separates like a good bomb maker from a not so good bomb maker? What kind of things is the good one doing that the less competent one isn't?
Well, I was on the job one time, and it was when I was an AO up in the North Squad, which was the most active squad in Belfast. I took over as an AO, right? And we put a line down, and the detonator was wired. No way, we used to use bell wire. Bell wire was hard to get. You couldn't get bell wire, but I would have got it because they threw me electrical contacts, right? So I put this line down with an R volunteer, which made me very, very suspicious of him. And I was stood down for calling him a tout, which I apologize for. I was wrong. But I later found out something else. People talk after a lot of years of talking, and then you get around your mates who was involved in the squad, and you start talking about jobs that backfired and were went off or where things went wrong. And anyway, in that job where I was pulled in by a security team and was questioned, you know, and I said, I put the line in, I didn't wear the dat. And by the way, the line was too short. I had to go into a site and take bell 2.5 wire and connect it up to the bell wire to go back to the firing set. It was too short. So that was me off the hook. But the Brits approached me to join them about 2 years before I was caught. They rung me up, and I was shrewd enough to tape record the approach, right? And it just so happens, after the approach, I was nervous as you would be being approached by British MI5 or British agents, do you know what I mean, to work for them. And I can't even remember what I said, but I think I said the sticker on job up or hold, something like that. But anyway, the guy who I believe was an informer just so happened to come around the corner and I said, look, I'm only after getting the post by MI5 to work for them. And the cops started following me. And there was fans that they wouldn't see following me. And I gave him the tape. And the tape disappeared. And he told me who he gave the tape to. So I took 10 years of my mates, my ones, and lovely Hearn Diggers, who was caught with me, saying to me, we believe he is an informer, blah, blah, blah. And I got down and we started talking about things. I didn't believe it. But the night before I was arrested, I got them home and the police tried to stop me in a checkpoint. And I drove through the checkpoint. I think I had the cops riding where they rode and my mara hit him to wave me down. And I just drove on and went to the house. And then the next day, I was caught in Isle of Bond Street. The night before, we were up in the Sarfields having a drink, a couple of pints to chill out.
I was going to, okay, that's funny. The MI5 tried recruiting you on the phone, yeah?
Yeah. I had a recorder at the side of my bed that played tape recorders because I was into my music, my cassettes, and I recorded the conversation.
What was their approach? Did they try threatening you? Did they try offering to pay you? How did they try recruiting you?
They offered to pay me. I can't really remember what because I put the phone down on them. You know, there's no sense in speaking to the enemy, you know.
Can you talk to me a little bit about like the actual process and the components of making like the typical bomb? How do you start? What's the process through it?
First of all, you start with grinding your fertilizer down to a certain consistency, right? Yeah, it only work when you get a certain down to a certain consistency, right? I don't want to get this information out too much because there's not. I don't want people picking up bomb making skills, but you want to mix it in the bath. You want to mix it with a chemical which was cancerous, nitrobenzene. You want to mix it with that, and you want to mix it with red diesel, and you want to have certain measures. This was the old way, and you would have had to use big, heavy gloves, you know, like marigolds. Did you ever hear of marigolds or yellow? Like two yellow gloves you wear?
Like for doing the dishes?
Yeah, you would have had two pairs of marigolds, and you would have had a load of them, because the chemicals would have burnt through the gloves when you were mixing. Right, and then you wanna give that to the bomb maker, or else you wanna put the Cortex in and the DATS in and the box timer in yourself.
Would it always be the case that if there's like a bombing plan for tomorrow, the bomb gets made like soon before, or would it be the case like you make a bomb and it gets used a week later or a month later or something?
No. You could do that, but with the nitrobenzene and the diesel, I put it out through the electrical no. I'm an electrician, but I forget this. No, the stuff that they use for cracking the walls. And you put the wire down.
Oh yeah, I do. Yeah.
I forget conduit. But you want to use plastic conduit to stuff the Cortex down, and after a week, the benzene and the chemicals want to act through the Cortex, so you want to have the re-Cortex again. That's when you're putting in keg bombs or something like that, or larger bombs, oil barrel bombs. If you understand what I mean, an oil barrel.
Would you have known like obviously you'd have known the other bomb makers in your own kind of unit, but like in the IRA generally, would bomb makers be known to each other, given that you share this skill set?
No, see mainly what happened. I would have made the bomb up, and I would have had an AO who was specialized, who was trained more than me. I wasn't trained. I was trained and I had to get one bomb in particular, which was very, very dodgy, right? I think it was £800 into a car, right? And I had to put all the cortex down, throw all the fertilizer mix until it keep on layer, keep on layer, keep on layer. Put the cortex literally into the drive well of the car, right? I left the car at a certain spot. When I went into the car park, I noticed two suspicious cars, right? And that car was caught a couple of days later. I reckon MI5 or the Brits tampered with the car and the car broke down. And they had to get a tow truck to tow it, and it was stopped on its way.
So there was a tow truck towing a car with a bomb in it. Wow. So would you, okay, would you have known members of, like, they wouldn't have been that local, but like in Belfast?
No one. I knew a lot of IRA volunteers, right? But nobody knew I was in the IRA family or nobody. None of my mates. The only ones that knew I was in the IRA was British Intelligence and the squad I was in. Ones you would have knew from your local area who was all connected. I was from the Lower Falls. When I looked down the Lower Falls, I knew all who was connected in the Lower Falls, because I used to help them out against the OCs. My OCs orders, I would have moved guns for them. I would have moved bombs for them. That, because they didn't know I was in the IRA, I would have helped them out. I would have moved a lot of weapons for them, stuff like that.
I was actually just about to ask you, like, your main role was obviously a bomb maker, but like, was it that segmented? Would you have ever been asked to go and do a shooting or
anything? I had my own two rifle and I had my own shotgun, so it was a good shot, right? They sent me out in the job one time with a sniper rifle, right? And it wasn't zeroed in for me to fire, and it was a waste of time, waste of an operation, because they should have had me zooming the weapon in, if you understand, with a scope. When I looked at it, it was way, way off. But I still fired a shot, and I missed.
Who did you fire at? A soldier, I presume?
A British soldier, yeah.
Oh, well, what was this in Belfast?
This is in Belfast, yeah. The top of a warehouse, and it led on to where you had plain sight. Maybe a 1,000, a 500 or a 700-yard shot. That's how far away he was.
Interesting. Okay. Would you have known who the members of?
Like, I was trained. When I was going through training, I was trained in weapons as well. I was trained in AK, carbine, and handguns.
I see. Would you have known who the local, we'll say the more local UVF and UDA guys were? Would you have known like your opposite number, so to speak?
No, because the way I look on it, I thought I was clean and I didn't need to know. But they had intelligence of me, if you understand what I mean.
Who did the UVF and the UDA?
When I get out of jail, the cops came to the house and Mormaid was on a death threat with a loyalist in Stonyford. He was a pedophile. My name was found on a list in an orange lodge up in Stonyford. he ended up being exposed.
Oh well, who are we talking about? Are we talking about with like William McGrath?
No. He would have been, now I would say he would be about the same age as me, a bit older, in his 60s. I forget his name, but he was very, very well known up in Stonyford. He was one of the main ones carrying out attacks on Catholic families to put intimidate them out of Stonyford.
I see, Jesus. Okay, so fair enough. How did you regard the competency, at least in terms of bomb making, of the UVF and UDA? Were they on your level or?
No, well, they were being trained by the Brits, as you know. They were behind the Monaghan bombing and the Dublin bombings with MI5 intelligence, you know. So I dare say, no doubt that they had capabilities, but probably the Brits was afraid to give it to them because they were just sectarian killers.
Okay, fair enough. But you wouldn't have like respected their bomb makers in that sense, right?
I wouldn't have had a clue who their bomb makers were.
When you
weren't that good when they blew themselves up at the Miami Show Bomb Massacre.
Right, yeah. Just out of interest, do you believe like the theories about it that like Robert Nirock was there and there was British Army people directing it?
I'm not 100%, but I wouldn't put it past that Robert Nirock was there.
Right, yeah, no, I agree. As you're sitting there like making a bomb, did your mind ever go to it all like what it's going to be used for? Like, did you feel like good,
no,
bad?
What I loved was going to bed and hearing a big boom. That was me, or a big boom the next day. You know,
you would like very kind of actively look out for it, yeah.
I was a few bombs I was involved in where it was, you see, my OC didn't want to put me at risk by driving bombs, right? The OC would have more used me more as a scout because he knew I was a good bomb maker and not blowing my own trumpet. But my actions speak for my words. You know, I was caught with £1,000 bomb and God knows where that would have been going to, maybe two bombs in a dead time. But as I say, we were infiltrated.
Would you, even roughly speaking, would you be able to like roughly come up with how many bombs you made that actually exploded? Roughly?
Made that many, I can't remember.
Fair enough. Would we be talking like more than 20?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Fair enough. If you were to look down through like a list on Wikipedia, do you think you could pick out your own stuff?
TV. Sometimes when I'm watching things, I get flashbacks and I see things on TV and I say, that was one of mine. You know?
Well, when that does happen, what's the feeling? Pride? Is it like something you had to do as part of a war?
It's... I know what drugs is like. It was better than drugs. Take it from me. Wow. I was striking a blow which I thought was for the freedom of Ireland.
Was there any operations or bombs that you were involved in that you look back and think, okay, this particular one actually really, really didn't advance this goal of United Ireland?
No, I would say because I'm a realist. I'm a firm believer in the official IRA calling their ceasefire. I think it was in 1972 or 1974. Because you couldn't bomb the Brits out of here. Do you know what I mean? You had to take a unionist into account. We'll have to think of the Germans as well. And as my unionist friend said to me, he's a son of David Irwin. Mark Irwin, and he's a loyalist. And he said to me, Patrick, I hope we aren't treated as well, as badly as you were treated by the Brits. That's how fearful he is of a Native Ireland happening, which is inevitable, which is stated in my last interview, only for Brexit. Only for Brexit. That's what is the catalyst for the breakup of the union, which is going to happen.
Interesting. Do you think I interviewed an ex-British soldier earlier, and he was saying to me that he doesn't think the campaign of violence kind of made a difference at all, because he thinks it would have come just by political means anyway. In my opinion, I think in order for the Brits to respect the Republicans going about the political process, there kind of had to be violence, because otherwise they just would have ignored him and told him to fuck off. Would you hold?
Oh, certain... you had to get off your knees and fight.
Okay, yeah. Can you take me to the bomb you made that actually destroyed the, I think it was the Sunday World office in Belfast?
It wasn't for the Sunday World. That was for the post office.
It just so happened that.
That is a stinking job as well, right? Because I think it was in a post office van. I'm not 100%, but the post office van was stopped by the Brits and allowed to go on. Where the surfer or not, or where the driver who was driving was confident enough to tell him with the post office driver, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. But the war was that f***ing dirty. You don't know what was going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you've stated it before there.
Martin Hughes says the right thing when he says Belfast was fucking stinking, and we were lucky that we were a special unit, and we were recruited from all different districts, and we didn't know each other. That's probably why we survived for so long before we got penetrated.
You mentioned to me before that you're of the strong opinion that the British let like a good few of your bombs go through and could have stopped them, but didn't.
Then for reasons of attack on farmers or for reasons of national security.
Okay. Do you think they had some interest in prolonging the war and keeping it going?
I think if the Brits could pull out of here in the morning, the fun could. They'd love to get rid of us, because it only shows you the way they have to the DUP on the bus. You know, they don't give a fuck about the unionists. And it's about time the unionists start to realise that.
I've actually, it's my opinion. Very obvious in hindsight and everything. But I think it's quite obvious that, like, the mainland Brits and the British government don't consider Northern Irish people who consider themselves Brits to be Brits. I think it's kind of an afterthought, and yeah, they treat them in a way that they wouldn't treat people on mainland Britain. Like, okay, can you take me to you sitting there in your underwear making a bomb and the authorities burst in?
I should have listened to my instinct, right? Seen it night before. Have you ever heard of the Angel of Death?
Yeah.
She was an SAS woman. I'm not 100% sure, but there was a blonde girl in the street when I wouldn't use my own car, you see, for moving stuff. I was doing something. I would always get a clean car, ask somebody for an animal car, or else use a company van. I think we used a company van that night. And when I was putting the bath, the scales, and all the rest, the other paraphernalia, she was numbering a fella at the corner of the street, right? But, and then in hindsight, when I left the house, I think it was picked up by a black taxi. It was actually drove by the Brits that drove me actually up the fucking Vaughan Street. When I look back, thinking about it, but I looked up at the corner, and this fucking cunt I knew stood out like a fucking sore thumb, watching me get into the fucking house. And They were waiting on me coming in because I had already dropped the volunteer off, and the householder was in the house. He went and got the papers, X, Y, and Z. But the informer was supposed to be there, right? But he got himself excused from the operation. If you understand. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but it's... I'm 99.9% right. And I spread his name everywhere. I spread it MI5 informer, blah, blah, blah. And his name is spread out the next day. So obviously he knows.
What happened was
all we heard was the door getting boom, 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 boom. So I'm sitting there naked with just a pair of chipmunks on because of forensics. They hadn't got DNA technology yet. I think the first person to get caught with DNA was Paddy Fox, right? So I used to mix in the net, and I heard the door getting banged in with whatever the fuck the butt banged in. And I took them away to get through the door, right? There was one door, and then there was a hall door, and we run up the stairs, and the householder says he locked himself in the bathroom, and the lock was on the inside, and it wasn't locked when the cops hit the house. You know, so I fucked his alibi up, and my army was in the corner, and I wrapped myself around a roll of carpet, and the RUC, I don't know why they beat my co-accused, or they beat them, but they beat the fuck out of me, and they loosened two of my teeth. So I have false teeth in now over the bit the fucker, I mean the cunt stuck his the gun up his nose, a clap, never clap. Forget that MP3 or something, not too sure. He stuck that up in the nose and he said, "You should have been dead. The SAS wanted the stiffest." And Detective Martindale came in and stated that when we were getting interviewed in Castleway for 3 days, you know.
What year was it?
The rest of us, and all I remember is walking through them, and the bastards, I had no shoes on, and they were standing on my feet, even when I was in the cop cape, and they left the slips open, so you could just see your last, the last impression of looking out was seeing Bellstar taxis, where I used to work. That was the last time I see Bellstar for 6 years until I got out of jail. But getting out of jail is just a blank to me. I can't remember anything.
I see. What year were you caught again? Remind me.
What?
What year were you arrested and jailed?
Because I was caught with a £1,500 bomb.
No, sorry. What year?
What year? 19... January the 12th, 1992.
Oh, 92.
Okay. If you check up on the same day... It's on YouTube. There's a link if you're a journalist and you can check up. You can see the link where they found the bomb factory in Clare Monastery on the same day of my arrest. That's on YouTube if you can look at it.
Interesting. What was your actual charge that you were convicted of?
I was convicted of conspiracy to cause an explosion and possession of explosives.
Okay.
Because I've done the right thing and kept my mouth shut in the barracks.
I was going to say, I assume, we'll talk about your interrogation and actual imprisonment in a second, but I assume you only ended up serving 6 years because of the Good Friday. You were supposed to do a lot more.
No. I'm so glad that I didn't get out to having to sign a document under the Good Friday Agreement that I would behave myself. Because I reapplied to join the IRA again a year after I got out of jail, and I was refused because I smoked dope.
Okay, sorry, we'll get to that. Take me back now. How did the interrogation go after this particular? What methods did they try and so on?
They tried a good cop, got bad cop. Your mates are broke. They're talking about you. They're doing this. They're doing that. But I had no interest. I always remember what my OC said to me. He said, see if they're being violent with you. fucking make sure you get mapped out so you can take a home. So I would have ended up begging one of them, hoping one of them would have knocked me out or something. But it wasn't violent. There was no violence involved. It was all psychological. And they knew they had us by the bollocks. But they never, I can't remember. I burnt my dad's when I got out of jail because I didn't want to remember anything. But I wish I had a captain because it would have put things together again, if you understand what I mean. What a place. Pieces of the jigsaw of the car again to all my questioning because and my dad one of the things the cops made a mistake. I'm sorry for digressing and moving on, but no, one of the cops made a mistake.
You're grand, sorry, go on.
One of the cops made a mistake when he was lifting me and put me into the barracks when he stood on the toe, and he says to me, we finally got the fur. That was my nickname. Nobody else knew it, but that pinpoints back to an orphan type. He's still living with there, and has people know he's a type, but he was let go.
And he was the particular one that gave you up, yeah?
No. This is a different one I'm talking about. This is when I was stood down. I was stood down from a squad in Ballymurphy for accusing a fellow of being on a tug because of a job that didn't go off should have killed the Brit. But that was the best thing that ever happened to me because it got me, I would have been reported back to the cops that I was stood down from the IRA, but I got back in again a couple of weeks later. They took me back in and told me to behave, but my suspicions could be wrong or my suspicions could be right. Nobody knows. No, nobody knows until secrets start to come out.
Of course, fair enough. It must be been very tough to operate in that environment where it's almost like a house of mirrors and like everyone suspects everyone. If there's a tiny little thing goes wrong, it might look like you're in a...
Oh, fuck, it was fucking horrible. Horrible. I mean, anything that went wrong in the job, I didn't believe for about 10 years that the guy who... was one of my best mates that had informed me, but he had his reasons why they turned him. And being honest, I felt like shooting him dead. I sold a gun for £600 of fucking cocaine.
Okay, I see. Have you since like been able to reconcile with this person?
No. I wasn't reconciled with him. He's dead to me. I would never. I've seen him twice. I seen him the other day. He was in a restaurant, and I just walked in and walked out. But if he confronted me in the bus, he'd soon get a dig in the jaw.
I see. Is it the case that this person there isn't enough kind of strong evidence to
he was took away for 7 days, who I believe by Scabatice.
Oh, okay, so he was taken away and lived to tell the tale. That's not terribly
he was taken away and for 7 days in South Armagh, and he lived to tell the tale. I believe because he was questioned by Scabatice. That's my opinion, and I've had an argument with my OC over it because I told him a security team were fucking stinking, and whoever interviewed him, you know, let him go.
Do you reckon that Scap, obviously being an agent himself, let him go because he was protecting a fellow agent or informer?
It could have been. I could be wrong, but that's only my brain putting two and two together, because I can tell you, Scapatici was alleged to have been stood down in 1982, right? The Sinn Féin and the IRA have stood up that, right? But I believe that's the biggest crap of shit. Because I'll tell you why, right? There was an informer, I don't know where he was an informer, right? But there was a guy called Joe Mulhern who was shot there, right? And I'm not sure, I can't remember, but I was told there was a statement in the Republican News pinpointing that he had compromised two volunteers and a householder. And apparently we got word sent in, but I can't remember. I can't remember about jail. Only thing I remember about jail is bad things. You know?
Fair
bad
enough.
things.
I was gonna ask.
Go ahead, all the way.
I was just gonna ask you. You just told me there you don't remember much about it, but prison, yeah, Lankesh, you said it was you would just sum it up as being 6 years of nothing good, yeah.
No, I've had some lonely people in Lankesh, but there was ones, to be honest, who made life hard for fellow prisoners. And there's not too many I'll say it, but there was, I call them ball bags. Ball bags, and there's a lot of them who put their head down now and not look at me, but I just shun them like they shun me. Couldn't give two fucks about them.
Okay, interesting. As a prisoner in there, like, were you expected to still be like an IRA soldier to some degree? And
no, you were stood down. You were stood down. You weren't involved. You were, unless you were involved in IRA operations. Now, the likes of an IRA operation, like digging the tunnel or cutting people off the wing or stuff like that, the IRA would have been in existence then. But when you went into jail, you were just an ordinary Joe Bloggs. But
okay.
I would have been called a negative head because I was a punk. I always didn't follow any rules. I done my own fucking thing. I smuggled things into jail that I shouldn't have, which I regret. But at the end of the day, I made my life easy. And when you get out of jail, you hear about staff smuggling things in.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? They're supposed to be fucking carrying the IRA lane, and they're smuggling stuff in themselves.
Are we, if you don't mind talking about, are we talking about drugs you smuggled in?
No, not drugs. But there was drugs smuggled in the jail. There was drugs smuggled in the jail.
Fair enough. Okay. Okay.
And so the camp staff of an FSA would be involved openly and smuggling drugs in.
So yeah.
Now, if we're going to drugs, the only drug I would have been hash. There wouldn't have been like ecstasy, like a wireless or anything like that. It just would have been hash.
I see. Okay, so you got out in what year? You said you went in 92 and did 6 years?
I got out in 1998. And I said to myself, I would join the IRA again because I didn't believe in the peace process at the time. But I wanted to get the exact... I was put in the corner and questioned like a fucking tout facing the wall. Do you know what I mean? I found out who one of them was, and he was a vicious kneecapper who would have stuck a sack in your fucking mouth and beat you where the fucking head would have gone. But he's no longer dead. Karma got him.
Okay. Okay, so you weren't allowed...
He's no longer living. He's passed away, unfortunately, but he was a violent man, and he was one of the ones that blacklisted me for smoking cannabis. But I says to him, man, no problems. And I was approached by our organization, which I refused because they were full of gangsters. The only ones I ever have respect for nowadays would be the new IRA.
Okay, interesting.
Because they're not taxing drug dealers, or they're not in the criminality or anything like that.
That seems mad that they wouldn't let you join because you smoked a bit of weed. I mean, I'm sure there were IRA members who were getting pissed out of their head every night of the week. But you
exactly.
Would have.
And there was nothing in the green book about smoking hash.
Okay, really? Yeah, I do know that they apparently the reason for tending to avoid people on drugs is that, like, you know, you can build up a debt that you need, you know, can kind of leave you vulnerable.
But I never picked up a cannabis habit until I went in the jail.
You went into jail.
I was jail. I got introduced until.
Oh, whoa. Okay. So you couldn't. They wouldn't let you join again. So from then on, you just had no paramilitary activities.
No paramilitary activities at all. No. No. I lived my life as a taxi driver. And then I ended up back at the firm I was working for. I was a foreman in the firm. But because of my drug addiction, I ended up losing my job because I asked them then to do drug tests so that I could stay off of drugs. But cocaine's a very, 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 very hard drug. And I'm a stubborn, staunch bastard. And even being staunch couldn't keep me up. I'm a recovered addict now at the moment. I'm on step four at the moment. I'm on the theme of step four, which is the hardest, which is where you open your Pandora's box and write down everything that you have done wrong, if you understand.
Do you think any of your like drug use and like we'll say like extreme drug use, you could call it, do you think any of that was from the like the stress and stuff of living the life you did?
I have no doubt. I have no doubt that drugs was my medicine to dealing with PTSD and my nerves and the depression and stuff like that. But I'm a happy-go-lucky guy now. Parkinson's I ended up with Parkinson's through cocaine abuse. So that was one bad thing that came out of it, and it has f***ed my head up, you know. But I'm 75 days clean today. So I'm only starting to get my thinking back.
Congrats. Genuinely, no, delighted for you that you're on the path to kicking your addiction. Yeah, well done, mate. Seriously, I was gonna say, okay, yeah. So I mean, just to wrap up, like, given that you spent so much time involved in paramilitary activities, it must have felt like a very strong kind of identity, and like, you know, you were kind of living for something, and you were part of something. So afterwards, is there some kind of void left in a person's life after you don't have that anymore?
Oh, I'm a happy-go-lucky guy, and what's in the past happened in the past, and I always like to move forward, you know. But to tell you the truth, I had a breakdown over it, and something that happened to me in jail, which I'll not talk about. But I pulled the ones who were sticking the knives into me, and they denied it. So I shook their hand, and I moved on.
Okay. See, like in your community now and stuff, like I guess around, for it'd be more people like your own age and a bit younger. Like, would you be given that you're an ex IRA man, would you get like a lot of like respect off people and kind of admiration and well done off people?
I wouldn't, Dave. Yes, I'm a proud IRA man. No matter where I go, I always tell people I wear when I'm out hiking, I tuck hiking up, and when I'm out hiking, I always wear a cap. I always wear a Vietnam cap or else an anti-fascist cap, and I have a ex-prisoner badge on it. I've been out with people who have been in the UDR. I've been out with an MI5 agent who was approached to work with MI5. I'm not just saying that they're an ex-IRA man.
As in you've been on a hike with like ex-MI5?
Yeah, the f***ing nutcase.
Wow, how did that come about? Did it mutual friends or something?
Mutual friends. He thought I was UVF man at the start.
Funny, would he have viewed you like a bit more favourably when he thought you were in the UVF?
He was English, right? And he was very, very interested in what happened here. So I filled him in. I educated him, and he has a lot of respect for me now. I don't hate my past. I'm proud of my past.
You do you have any respect for him, given his MI5 role, or is it something you've just...
No, he wasn't. He was approached to work for the MI5.
Oh, excuse me. I thought he was like an ex-MI5 guy.
He was approached to work for them, be an agent. Not an agent like in the IRA. work for MI5 intelligence.
All right, okay, but didn't.
But didn't, no.
Okay.
Don't know the reason why, I never explained, but...
Okay, so I'm looking forward to the book whenever it does come out. I'd love to speak to you, and I've forgotten the name of the gentleman you're writing.
Graham Cousins.
Graham Cousins. I'd love to speak to Graham, and maybe even possibly the two of you at the same time too. It would be brilliant.
Well, if you want, I'd organise that. Graham's a lovely fella.
Sound very good.
And he has form. He's not like people said. People have criticised me because he left in the 70s. But he was there when it was really, really hard, really, really tough.
Okay, very good. We'll wrap it up there in a second. Was there anything you wanted to leave us with? Anything you just wanted to tell the audience before we go?
I always finish an interview with a Joe Strummer quote. Without people, we're nothing.
Without people, we're nothing?
That's Joe Strummer to the Clash.
Can you unpack that statement a bit? Explain it for us.
It means I'm not that intellectual the Brit Joe Strummer time, but he was a very, very well-known Bond member, and he was an anti-fascist, and he actually wore a H Black t-shirt on stage.
Really? Wow.
That's how much he was tuned. He came over here and he went round all the barracks and got his photograph, filmed the Crumlin Road Jail and stuff like that, and going through the Ring of Steel, which was a lot of shit, because we broke the Ring of Steel plenty of times.
I'm sorry, I forgot to ask this earlier, but I'll let you go after. If you were, when you were imprisoned, if the order came down from on high to do a dirty protest, or to even go even further and do a hunger strike, would you have been down for it?
Yeah.
The only thing
was asked, I think a guy asked me very, very discreetly would I go on an escape, and I said, what's the point? I've only got 6 months left to do, and then the colonel was found in the cash.
Speaking of prison escapes, I'm going to be speaking to not the Dark, obviously, but the Brendan Hughes, who was involved in planning the helicopter one. So yeah, on the prison break note.
Was that in Portlaoise?
There was one in Mountjoy on Halloween 73.
Mountjoy.
Second ever. I was doing a bit of research. Second ever prison escape with a helicopter. The first was in Mexico.
Very nice. Yeah, we were very nice and cheers.
I was going to say, I interviewed a blogger who speaks to a lot of loyalist fellas, and he said even the loyalist fellas would kind of admire begrudgingly the creativity of the IRA somewhat.
Well, we're very, very creative.
But
we're always looking jobs, and I've even spotted one when I was just trained by Faithful Barracks.
Again, now, sound for everything. I'd love to speak to you again, and maybe you and Cousins at the same time, to be brilliant. Thank you very much for everything, all your insight, everything you shared.
Go near a bore, lad. Okay, slant.